O God, the King of the whole world, since those that stand now with me are thy people, and those that are besieged are also thy priests, I beseech thee that thou wilt neither hearken to the prayers of those against these, nor bring to effect what these pray against those. Whereupon such wicked Jews as stood about him, as soon as he had made this prayer, stoned him to death. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 54, The Circle and the Civil War. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. It is one of the most famous tales in the Mishnah and the Talmud, that of Choni the Circle Drawer. The story appears in Ta'anit, the tractate describing the fasts observed by the Jewish community in times of drought. In one moment, in desperation, the people turned to a miracle worker known to have a particularly profound connection to the divine. Thus, we are told by the Mishnah, it happened that the people said to Choni the Circle Drawer, pray for rain to fall. He prayed, and no rain fell. The Mishnah then, in a tale known by traditional Jews to this day, tells us what happens next, and how Choni earned his appellation. All this is from the Cencino translation. What did he do? He drew a circle and stood within it, and exclaimed, Master of the universe, thy children have turned to me because they believe me to be as a member of thy household. I swear by thy great name that I will not move from here until thou hast mercy upon thy children. Rain then began to drip, and thereupon he exclaimed, It is not for this that I have prayed, but for rain to fill cisterns, ditches, and caves. The rain then began to come down with great force, and thereupon he exclaimed, It is not for this that I have prayed, but for rain of benevolence, blessing, and bounty. Rain then fell in the normal way, until the Israelites in Jerusalem were compelled to go up for shelter to the Temple Mount because of the rain. They came and said to him, In the same way as you have prayed for the rain to fall, pray now for the rain to cease. End quote. The story describes a spiritual intimacy with the Almighty achieved by Choni, wonders wrought by him on behalf of the Jewish people. But rabbinic literature has more to say about Choni the circle drawer. And taken in tandem with the story in Josephus, we are able to derive ominous but important lessons about Jerusalem after the reign of Queen Shlom Tzion. As we have discussed, the reign of Shlom Tzion, in which the queen oversaw political and foreign affairs, and the spiritual leadership rested with the Pharisaic sage Shimon ben Shetach, is described by the Talmud as a golden age, one which, albeit brief, set the stage for the survival of what was later called Rabbinic Judaism during the turbulent generations to come. And come they did. Shlom Tzion had two sons, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. The former had already been made high priest, but it was clear that the latter had amassed a great deal of military support. As Josephus tells it, Shlom Tzion failed to settle the foreseen dispute in advance, and with her death, Aristobulus immediately launches a war against his brother. After a series of engagements, Hyrcanus capitulates and abdicates. Josephus, writing of Hyrcanus, tells us the following. When he, meaning Hyrcanus, had sent a message to his brother about agreeing the matters between them, he laid aside his enmity to him on these conditions, that Aristobulus should be king, that he, meaning Hyrcanus, should live without intermeddling with public affairs, and quietly enjoy the estate he had acquired. When they had agreed upon these terms in the temple, and had confirmed the agreement with oaths, and the giving one another their right hands, and embracing one another in the sight of the whole multitude, they departed, the one Aristobulus to the palace, and Hyrcanus, as a private man, to the former house of Aristobulus. Thus at this moment rulership in Jerusalem is taken by Aristobulus. Into the historical scene steps a family that will impact the sacred city until its destruction and beyond. Recall that Aristobulus' grandfather, John Hyrcanus, had forcibly converted the Idumean people to Judaism. And it's at this moment in our tale that his choice begins to have real repercussions for Jewish history. For this forced conversion created connections between the Idumeans and the Hasmonean house. And one Idumean is a member of the entourage of Hyrcanus. Josephus continues, But there was a certain friend of Hyrcanus's, an Idumean, called Antipater, who was very rich, and in his nature an active and a seditious man, who was at enmity with Aristobulus, and had differences with him on account of his goodwill to Hyrcanus. End quote. Antipater, as we will see soon, is not only a friend of one wing of the Hasmonean family, that of Hyrcanus, he is also the father of a man named Herod. What is immediately manifest is Antipater's political skill. He is sent on behalf of Hyrcanus to negotiate with an Arabian king, and to forge an alliance against Aristobulus. Again, as Josephus tells us, the alliance was established in a city now in Jordan that some of you may have visited. Quote, "Now Arabia is a country that borders upon Judea. However, Hyrcanus sent Antipater first to the king of Arabia in order to receive assurances from him that when he should come in the manner of a supplicant to him, he will not deliver him up to his enemies. So Antipater, having received such assurances, returned to Hyrcanus to Jerusalem. A while afterward, he took Hyrcanus and stole out of the city by night and went a great journey and came and brought him to the city called Petra, where the palace of Aretas was." End quote. Aretas, king of this Arabian region, allies with Hyrcanus in order to overthrow Aristobulus. And Josephus continues, quote, "He made an expedition against Aristobulus with an army of 50,000 horse and foot and beat him in the battle. And when after that victory many went over to Hyrcanus as deserters, Aristobulus was left desolate and fled to Jerusalem." End quote. Thus at this point we have Hyrcanus and his allies taking Judea, with his brother Aristobulus holed up in Jerusalem and Hyrcanus' alliance outside it. Hyrcanus and the Arabians besiege Jerusalem. And Josephus adds, and note well his words, quote, "As this happened at the season when the Feast of Unleavened Bread was celebrated, which we call the Passover, the principal men among the Jews left the country and fled into Egypt." End quote. We must at this moment pause to note the profound irony of what is unfolding. This is the Passover season, a moment that is meant to be a holiday in which all Jews from across Judea and the diaspora come to Jerusalem to celebrate the exodus from Egypt. But now, thanks to a civil war between Hasmonean brothers, not only are Jews unable to enter Jerusalem, many of the principal Jews of Jerusalem and Judea, we are told, go back to Egypt. What is meant to be a moment of profound Jewish unity is transformed into a terrible period of Jew versus Jew. It is, according to Josephus, at this moment that Choni the miracle worker, Choni the drawer of circles, steps into the scene again. While rabbinic literature is clearly admiring of the ease with which Choni's prayers impact the weather, it also records that his readiness to make demands of the divine, such as, "I'm not leaving this circle, God, until you bring rain. I don't want this type of rain, I want that type of rain." All this, the rabbis write, made Jewish spiritual leadership in Jerusalem uneasy. Shimon ben Shetach, the Mishnah tells us, informs Choni that he considered placing him in a state of excommunication for the way he conversed with the divine. Quote, "Shimon ben Shetach sent to him this message, 'Were it not that you are Choni, I would have placed you under the ban. But what can I do unto you who importune God, and he accedes to your request, as a son that importunes his father, and he accedes to his request?'" End quote. Thus, Shimon ben Shetach states that he seems to find Choni's actions inappropriate, yet he ruefully acknowledges that Choni's relationship with God is undamaged. And we must understand what may be the larger critique of Shimon. The prayer for rain in Second Temple Jerusalem was seen as a moment for fostering unity. All Israel assembled in a fast. All Israel joined in prayer. To allow Choni to pray on the people's behalf seems to create a crutch that perhaps prevents the fostering of this unity. Choni is alone with God, in intimacy with the Almighty in his circle, while the rest of Israel is not joined with him. They are outside it. It is all the more striking, therefore, that the Talmud gives us a tale about Choni that emphasizes the importance of fellowship with others, in which Choni miraculously sleeps for 70 years and emerges in an age when no one recognizes him. This leads to the tale's heartbreaking conclusion. When Choni hears someone in the study hall quote him, he exclaims that he is the Choni of which they speak and is not believed, and Choni dies of a broken heart. To this the Talmud appends the conclusion, "O chavruta, O mituta," either companionship or death. Choni in the story dies for lack of companionship, and many Talmudic tales can be read literally or symbolically, and one wonders whether this story and its concluding statement hints to an account of Choni's death that is found in Josephus. Josephus tells us that during this civil war, during this Passover besieging of Jerusalem, the forces of Hyrcanus, knowing the power of Choni's prayers, requested that he pray for the defeat of Aristobulus' forces inside Jerusalem. To this Choni, or Onias, replies that civil war was itself a sin and that he would not take sides. Josephus tells us what occurs next. Quote, "Now there was one whose name was Onias, a righteous man he was, and beloved of God, who in a certain drought had prayed to God to put an end to the intense heat, and whose prayers God had heard and had sent them rain. This man had hid himself, because he saw that this sedition would last a great while. However, they brought him to the Jewish camp and desired that as by his prayers he had once put an end to the drought, so he would in like manner make imprecations on Aristobulus and those of his faction. And when, upon his refusal and the excuses that he made, he was still by the multitude compelled to speak, he stood up in the midst of them and said, O God, the King of the whole world, since those that stand now with me are thy people, and those that are besieged are also thy priests, I beseech thee that thou wilt neither hearken to the prayers of those against these, nor bring to effect what these pray against those. Whereupon such wicked Jews as stood about him, as soon as he had made this prayer, stoned him to death. End quote. Combining the Mishnaic story with that of Josephus, we are inspired to ponder the profound irony of what unfolds. The man to whom Israel turned in times of crisis suddenly turned upon him in rage. The man who once stood in a circle on behalf of his people is now surrounded by his people, who kill him for suggesting that disunity is itself a sin. Either companionship or death, so the Talmud tells us in describing the death of Choni. This can be seen as a sensitive description of the human condition. But given Josephus's account, perhaps the phrase can also be taken as a Talmudic version of Benjamin Franklin's statement during the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We must all hang together, or we will most assuredly all hang separately. We must keep this story in mind as we continue Jerusalem's tale, for as we will soon see, it is this disunity that brings Rome into Jerusalem. Because the Jews are an eternal people, memories of disunity abound, but memories of disunity can also, because of Jewish eternity, serve as lessons for the future. And, as we will ultimately see, the wars in Jerusalem of brother against brother will ultimately be remembered by one man, Menachem Begin, who will ensure that in learning the mistakes of history, the Jewish state will not make the mistake of repeating them. The story of a battle of brother against brother is one that will appear again and again in Jerusalem's story, but it will also portend a more heroic moment yet to come. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.